Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Mr. Sullivan.
What are you eating? I can hear the crackle of the... there's something that you're not revealing to the audience right off. I would like to...
Is that right? You heard crackle?
I would like to...
That sound right there?
Yeah. I would like full transparency, please.
All right. Well, I have in my hand, I've noticed that... my voice has sometimes been getting a little raw. And so what I have in my hand right here is an individually wrapped Ricola dual action honey lemon lozenge, which I've got at the ready just in case.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Ricola, little inside inside podcast secrets there.
I can see the commercial
here. I have to say, you have.
I can see the Swiss, the Swiss horn blower, the Ricola.
Ricola, that's right.
Ricola, yeah, that's nicely done, actually. And yeah, so that's good. Yeah, and that was a really good wrap up 2 hours that we had the other day on the free zone.
Yes, and, it really was.
Yeah. And I'm starting to see we're getting a lot of interest. We have a terrific wealth manager from the Bay Area, Alan Olson, who's starting in December. And I'm talking to Richard Rossi, who we all know very well, and he's talking about the early part of next year. And I have I have a really great IP lawyer coming in, and he's coming in, you know, the early months of 2021. So we're adding a lot of talent to the ranks. That's what I feel.
What I'm noticing is how long have we been doing this group now? How many?
It'll be three years in April, I think. So, yeah, 3 years in April. Yeah.
3 years in April, and largely the same people. I mean, we've got a really good core group that's been from the beginning. So I'm noticing there's a shorthand there of we're getting more and more layers of, awareness of what everybody does. And we're starting to see a lot more collaborative opportunities there.
Well, yeah. It's kind of interesting. Yeah, you'll be interested in something. I've just modified a previous form and created a new one. The previous one was the Moving Future, which is a standard for the 10 times ambition program. And, yeah, that's been in place for 10 years, maybe 9 or 10 years. We've had that. But I was thinking of a free zone future, free zone future one. And it's designed the same way. So the layout is very, very similar. But you'll be interested in this because I borrow from my friend Dean. I went to, I needed something, and I went to the Dean Jackson,
the well
ideas for rent special. And I just have to bring it up on my computer here. Okay. Yeah. Right there. I'm just clicking on it right now. Come on. Just obey me. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So, very, very, very interesting, and I just have to, you know, technology has to be cooperative, too. You know, it's not just humans. People are probably saying, what happened during this period? We were listening.
Let me tell people
something.
That while we're waiting, thanks to our sponsor, Ricola, about the wonderful delights of the honey lemon that is oozing down my throat, coating my vocal cords.
Yeah. Well, anyway, across the top on the moving future, you have morale, momentum, and motivation. And it's morale for the last 90 days, momentum for the next 90 days, and then motivation for the next. And then I have something very, very interesting. I have, so what I have for the pre-zone future is ambition, creativity, and cooperation. Okay, so those are the big words. And then on the next line down, I have vision, capability, and reach.
Oh, yes. I'm very familiar with that.
Yes. And then the next line down, where we usually have last 90 days right now and next 90 days, instead I have commitment, courage, and capability.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so if I put the three in each box together, what you have is ambition, vision, and commitment.
Wow, very nice.
And then you have creativity, capability, and courage. Courage, yeah. And then the next one, you have cooperation, you have reach, and you have confidence.
I like this. This is great.
Yeah. And then you just brainstorm. You just brainstorm what these are. You just brainstorm and how many of them you have. And then down at the bottom, what I have is thinking about your thinking. What are the five new things that you have thought about and just seeing where you are in brainstorming for ambition, creativity, and for reach. Cooperation.
Yeah, that's the great thing about these tools is the insight, you know, that you get from those.
Yeah.
And being able to summarize
about,
that.
Thinking about your thinking, you know, and I have a book in the offing. In other words, it's one of the quarterly books. It's called Thinking About Your Thinking. Mm-hmm. And I said that most people, in fact, don't.
Most people don't think about their thinking. They just happens.
They think about a lot of other things, but they don't think about their thinking. And say, well, what are they, if they're not thinking about their thinking, what are they thinking about? I said, well, they're thinking about things.
Yes.
They're thinking about things. And I've been in conversations with people where, for the better part of the time that I was with them, they were talking about they own this, they're thinking about buying this, and they're fixing this up, and they're trading this, and they're going online, and they're seeing if they can get this. And it's all about things. It's not about, it's not about what they're thinking about. They're thinking about things. They're just thinking about the things. And then other people think about people.
Yes.
And they're thinking about this person, and they have technology which allows them to do this nonstop from morning till night.
Yes. That's something.
And then other people think about thoughts. Okay, they think about thoughts, but they're not their thoughts, they're other people's thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I would say that almost all the killing on the planet and since the very beginning has happened about people who think a thought and they don't like that other people are thinking a thought. In other words, other people are thinking a thought that doesn't agree with the thought that they're thinking, but neither side's actually thought up the thought. It was somebody else's thought that they were defending or trying to defeat and everything. So if you think about those three activities, thinking about things, thinking about people, thinking about thoughts, that pretty well use up an entire lifetime without once during that period of time is actually thinking about your thinking.
Now, that's not table 10 talk. You know, when we go to table 10, I think that's part of the delight of table 10 is I don't think we've ever talked about things or things like that. I mean, it's so, yeah.
Well, you've peripherally, and I peripherally, have a discussion about the Four C's lifetime, mm-hmm. know, the Four C's lifestyle. And, mm-hmm. You know, and who, not how, as it relates to our personal life. We both thought about that. But who, not how, and the four seasons lifestyle are thoughts that we've kind of created and developed and expanded and, you know, in the marketplace. So they're not other people's thoughts. You know, there's nobody mm-hmm. else's thought. That I'm in touch with a lot of thoughts going back 2,500 years. And I don't remember Aristotle ever talking about the Four Seasons lifestyle.
The Four Seasons lifestyle, that's right.
And Plato definitely wasn't into who, not how. You know, he wasn't who, not how kind of guy.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. So,
that's so...
Cheese and Whiskers. Yeah. Looking at Thomas Aquinas here. Yep. No Cheese and Whiskers. Whiskers.
No more Thomas Cheese Aquinas. Whiskers. That's right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boy, it's fun when you think, like, when you start thinking about the collective stuff like this, like how, you know, you build this body of thoughts, you know, that build on each other. And I think that's mm-hmm. really, I think that's really something.
Karl mm-hmm. Marx, the eight profit makers, the eight profit making. Karl Marx had no feel for that whatsoever.
That's right. The opposite of that. That's exactly right. Let's cut
yeah.
out the profit stiflers. Yeah. The eight profit stiflers.
He had no feel for it. He had no feel for that. Well, there are people who kill over the thoughts of Karl Marx, you know, and and so when you think about it, I'm going to draw this book. It was just saying, but all you have to do to think about your thinking is to look back over the last 90 days and say, where did I make my greatest gains? Mm. Okay, and let's just take the four freedoms. Let's just take mm-hmm. four freedoms. Where did I increase my freedom of time, my freedom of money, my freedom of relationship, and freedom of purpose? In order to do that, you have to depart from the world of thinking about things, thinking about people, and thinking about other people's thoughts. And you have to look at your own experience. and you're the only person who has access to that experience. So right off the bat, if you're thinking about those experiences, it's unique. It's never happened before. No one's ever thought about your particular set of experiences before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking a lot this week about the about Cloudlandia and about the, you know, we're talking about the vision capability and reach. And one of the things, this is a thought that I had. I had a nice talk with Eben Pagan for about an hour the other day, which is a rare thing. Hadn't done that in a long time with him. But, you know, we were talking about coaching. And we're talking about the he's running a program for virtual coaches now. And one of the thoughts that I've been having is this idea of moving into the results as a service economy. And I'm wondering about the the role of coaching or the next evolution of coaching in a way that that Cloudlandia is offering the opportunity for in a way that it hasn't been possible, many, many years. So
no, I'm Well, no, I think that the two go together, that the emergence of Cloudlandia and the emergence of coaching, actually, one is not possible without the other.
So here's an interesting thought. This is the way I described it to Evan, and I've been thinking this way. So I'll share the thought process here, the show my work, the path to get here. I was thinking just, as a metaphor that, or an analog, that let's say that there's an established marketplace for completed Rubik's Cubes, that a completed Rubik's Cube has a value of $1,000 in the marketplace, that there's a ready buyer for Rubik's Cubes at $1,000. Now, if somebody gets this idea that, hey, you can make money solving Rubik's Cubes, that there's a market for it. So if you were to take that approach, the rugged individual, the how do I do this is the first thought. Well, how do I complete a Rubik's Cube? And so somebody might go and buy up a bunch of Rubik's Cubes, or, buy up raw materials, Rubik's Cubes, and say, I'm going to solve Rubik's Cubes, even though they don't know how. And their first thought would be, okay, I'm going to figure it out. And they take the Rubik's Cube. And first of all, in order to be able to do it, you need to be able to solve one Rubik's Cube. If you can't solve one, you can't solve 1,000 of them, right? You've got to be able to know how to solve one. So the first job is to figure that out. Now, the rugged individual would take the Rubik's Cube and through sweat equity and trying to great effort and experimentation, try to figure out how to solve a Rubik's Cube. Now, the next level of person might think, I think I could buy a book on how to solve a Rubik's Cube, or watch some videos, or a little, a Udemy course or something that I could learn to solve the Rubik's Cube. And they would find out very quickly, with just a little bit of research, that there is a algorithm that will, in 28 moves maximum, solve a Rubik's Cube from any unsolved state. Meaning, if you take this Rubik's Cube and you do these 28 moves, somewhere between the 20th move and the 28th move, the Rubik's Cube will pass through a solved state. So if you know
just
that
for formula, just for my benefit, since I've never involved myself in this activity, what is a completed Rubik's Cube?
Have you ever seen those cubes, Dan, that are...
No, I know what it looks like. I know what it looks like. But because it didn't attract my attention, my brain was looking for something.
A completed Rubik's Cube is when all the colors on all sides, all nine mini boxes, are all the same colors on their appropriate
side. There are six sides. There are six sides.
That's exactly right. So there's six sides, six colors, and all nine boxes are in the same color. Mm-hmm. That's the solved Rubik's Cube, and you do it by twisting and manipulating. Okay, so that's what I was saying, is that from any unsolved state, there are 28 moves that if you turn it back to, and then the top, you turn right three, that those kind of things. If you do these 28 moves, somewhere between the 20th move and the 28th move, you'll have a completed Rubik's Cube. Now, access to that knowledge probably reduces your time that it would take you to figure it out on your own, if you would ever figure it out on your own.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it increases the likelihood that you will be able to figure it out. And it does it, but it's asynchronous, and you have to put in the, you have to connect the dots. It's just the instructions for it. No human interaction in this. Mm-hmm. Somebody figured out, hey, I know how to do it. Here's my blueprint for it. Go for it, right? I'll sell you the blueprint for $25. Mm-hmm. A book, whatever it is, right? Okay. Then, and my visualizing on this was really almost at a flea market that we're going to, progressive tables at the flea market, that the first one offers Rubik's cubes for $5. You could buy a unfinished Rubik's cube. Then at the next table for $25, you can buy the book that shows you how to solve a Rubik's cube. Mm-hmm. For $25. Okay. Then the next stage would be, I'll help you solve the Rubik's cube, right? Take my course on how to solve the Rubik's cube. Mm-hmm. And you may spend $100 to go to a little course where you're in a room with people who are all figuring out how to solve the Rubik's cube. And the thing would be that you're taking group coaching about this, and hopefully you and your peers all together are collectively going to figure this out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at the next table, there's private Rubik's cube coaching. I'll show you how to. I'll work with you one-on-one to help you solve this Rubik's cube. And that may be $250 to have mm-hmm. a Rubik's cube coach who will show mm-hmm. you how to do it and guide your hands and manipulate you through the process. And then the next gap up would be then there's a table at the end that says, I buy Rubik's cubes for $1,000. I buy finished Rubik's cubes for $500, for $1,000. But where I'm saying is that this is the current state of coaching is somewhere along that progression. And what I'm proposing is that there's, I think, a market opportunity for someone to put a boost in between, right beside the completed Rubik's cube, that says completed Rubik's cubes, $500.
Mm-hmm.
And you could buy the completed Rubik's cube for $500 and then just mm-hmm. walk one step to the next table and turn it in for $1,000.
Another $500, $1,000, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where you could double your money. So you just mm-hmm. take it. It's the ultimate who, not how.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder, there's something interesting both in the scale of that I was talking about, the raw material for $5, the knowledge for $25, the help, the course for $100, the coaching for $250, 25%. But you could buy the finished thing with no time investment, and you could buy multiples of them at the same time. Mm-hmm. You could buy as mm-hmm. many as you have cash for. You could take mm-hmm. all the Rubik's cubes and then turn them in. It's the when you have a who, that doesn't require any of your time. And I think mm-hmm. that this is where I think there's big Cloudlandia opportunities here.
Yeah.
Is to really just get down to the bottom of it, that it's what you really want, what people in most cases, in a lot of cases, really want, is they want the end result. Like I look at the marketplace for completed Rubik's cubes, and all of this is story. It's just, mm-hmm. metaphors kind of thing. But the end thing is that what people are applying, what people are taking coaching for, or consulting or any of these things, it's not the terminal result. You know, the terminal result is the actual exchange in the marketplace, right? Where their payoff is the result for the end user. Like the terminal thing of it is when somebody is completed, you know?
Mm-hmm. There's a scene from an Indiana Jones movie the search for the Holy Grail, or it's
mm-hmm.
Search for the Ark. It's the Ark of the
Covenant. Mm-hmm.
Covenant, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And Indiana Jones, Harrison Ford, is in a marketplace in hostile territory, and the crowd clears, and there's this man who's got two swords, and he whips them, you know, and he's about six foot seven, and mm-hmm. you know, and you know, and he's clearly, you know, very, very skilled at using two swords in a fight. And Indiana Jones is in a hurry, so he watches the guy swish his, you know, he's demonstrating his thing, and then Indiana Jones pulls out his pistol and shoots the guy, and then he gets on with things. So what I sense is that some people have a nose for a fundamental activity that's always going to work to their benefit, and it's always going to be valuable. And they go right to that, and they bypass any intermediate steps. So I'm going to put a couple of metaphors together here and come back and look at the rubric cube. So there's Indiana Jones. Now, mm-hmm. Indiana Jones said, you know, when you go to foreign territory, you've got to be able to be good with two swords. And so he spends 2 years of his time learning how to switch swords like the other person did. Mm-hmm. But Indiana Jones is on a mission to find something, and this man is just an obstacle in the way. And so he uses, you know, a pistol, you know, a loaded pistol to eliminate the other man's. The other man is clearly more skilled than Indiana Jones is. And, you know, if Indiana Jones had practiced for 2 years to meet this man, it's not guaranteed that Indiana Jones would beat him. So, but Indiana Jones didn't have a goal of beating this guy. The other guy was just an obstacle, and he got rid of him. So that's the metaphor here. If you want to know what people train for, you got to get a feel for what the final result is that they're looking for. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and a Rubik's Cube for some people would be the defining moment in their life. In other words, they have a goal that mm-hmm. they finally got the six colors on six sides. So each side is just the six colors, 1 through 9, I guess. And is it letters or numbers?
Sides. Yeah, no letters or numbers.
Oh, they're just colors, right?
They're just colors. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing I was thinking, you know, we're talking about the age of credentials, where having gone to a certain university and studied certain subjects and got a degree, and then you have a title that goes along with the degree. So I was thinking about that in terms of strategic coach entrepreneurs going back the 31 years, little bit more than 31 years, we've had strategic coach clients. And I've had roughly about 6,000 plus who have been in my workshops over the last 31 years. I never remember an entrepreneur ever bringing up where they went to university, what mm-hmm. they studied, what kind of degree they have. Mm-hmm. It's just never come up as a subject. And yet, this is a major topic of conversation in the non-entrepreneurial world.
Mm-hmm.
No, I went to the most famous Rubric Cube University in the world, and I had Professor so-and-so, and he taught me.
I studied right under Mr. Rubric.
Mr. Rubric. I mean, he's married to Mr. Rubric's daughter, you know, and he inherited the Rubric fortune. So, this is the real deal. But that has no, I have absolutely no interest in this topic. I have no interest in the skill, and I don't care who Mr. Rubric was and, how his daughter turned out. And so the whole point is that it seems to me that there's an infinite opportunity for coaching, because you're always going to find somebody of people who are passionately interested in this topic, and they judge themselves not to be where they want to be, you know, skill wise, and they'll pay for making the journey from not so good to really good.
Yeah.
And I guess you call that coaching.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really, that there's an opportunity then for that last step, the next determinant step, you know?
It's really interesting. YouTube is very interesting in this, in this conversation. So Sam Poulter is Stephen Poulter's youngest son. So I would say he's probably about 13 or 14 years old. And so he has probably for the last 5 years, so that take him back to like second or third grade, he said, any topic that my teacher brings up in any subject, or my teachers when I go to school, any topic, I can go home that night and I can look at 5 different YouTube explanations of this topic, and the next morning I know more than my teacher does. He says I tested out every class, every teacher, and the moment they bring up a topic and explain it the next morning using 5 YouTube videos, I know more about the topic than they do.
So he's like, so tomorrow, next week, we're going to talk about this, this, and this. So by the way, you go home, you can watch these videos and know more than your teacher. That's pretty, that is true, that when you take like Khan Academy into the situation too, which is just the most amazing.
I went through algebra lately. I hadn't been in touch with algebra as a classroom topic. Since 19, when would that have been?
Well, I'm 58, looking, I have in my library Euclid's Elements in my library as a result of a conversation we had.
Book one, there's 47 propositions. I 1 year memorized all 47, and I could go from number one to number 47 because they build on each other.
That's interesting.
But the Khan Academy is so great because, I was looking at, what was I looking at? Set theory. Do you know what set theory is?
No. How are you saying it? Set?
S-E-T, theory. It's called set theory. It's a form of mathematics.
No. Oh, yeah. Okay. Set theory. Yeah, of course.
It's a form of logic. Okay. So I'll establish a set. Selling. Okay, so the set is selling. S-E-L-L-I-N-G. Okay. Cheese. Okay. Whiskers. Now, cheese and whiskers are subsets of selling.
Okay.
Selling cannot be a subset of cheese. Subset cannot be a subset of whiskers. So they are understandable. Cheese and whiskers, according to Professor Jackson, who I happen to know. As a matter of fact, I happen to have an exclusive Table 10 relationship with Jackson in two different French restaurants in Toronto. Okay, spent hours. New things were created out of the conversations. So when I say that cheese and whiskers are subsets of selling, I got it from Professor Jackson. So I know that in the realm of set theory, they are subsets of selling cheese and whiskers.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to let you know. But what it is, it proves that artificial intelligence cannot be superior to human intelligence.
Because it can't know that. It can't understand how the connection
is. Human intelligence invented math, human intelligence invented microchip technology, human intelligence thing. And artificial intelligence is just a subset of human intelligence.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
I like this. I mean, I've heard those things.
So what I'm trying to put together here is that people are interested in all sorts of things. And I think what Eben is pointing on, that the internet expands almost to the point of infinity, the number of different things that people would be interested in that they would pay for coaching to get better at that thing.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, and I agree with that totally.
I do too. I mean, and so your access to it is so unlimited.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the only question
and you raise the bar. I mean,
the only question is intellectual property law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you look at. I mean, you think of things like the that level of courses and things like at that level, level three or on our situation, the master class and Khan Academy and YouTube, I would put in that category where you can learn how to do things.
Well, it was interesting. I was having a discussion with Chris and Brandon Voss, Chris Voss and his son.
I was just going to bring up his master class. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And the condition was that if master class took their thing, master class then owned their intellectual property. And Chris said, no, you don't. No, you don't.
Yeah.
And he says, well, we own all the intellectual property of all the people that's on Masterclass. And he said, well, then you have a decision to make. If you want my material on Masterclass, you're going to have to make an exemption for me. Because you're not going to own my intellectual property. And Masterclass gave in.
Yeah, right. That seems like nobody would. Why would somebody give up their intellectual property to be? Yeah, that's... Yeah, that's
it brings up interest because ownership, there's this thought there. This is a thought that's in the Silicon Valley world that ownership will just disappear. People won't own things. People will just pay a little bit to use things. They won't own it. And I says, well, somebody's owning it. Somebody's owning it. I mean, if it's on
that's true.
The
that's
internet,
the thing about I say about houses, about the real estate market. That if people stop buying homes, well, they're not going to stop living in homes. And somebody has to own the homes that people are living in. So it's not the shelter. The shelter business is not going out of style.
Yeah,
it's firmly entrenched on one of our Maslow's hierarchy.
But the interesting thing is that owned property means more to people than rented property.
Yes. Yes, it does.
You will infinite, you will infinitely improve owned property, but you will minimally improve rented property.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying you won't keep it nice and clean and everything else. You will.
Mm-hmm.
But it has no value. You're not adding really any value.
You're only surface improvements,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Aesthetic improvements. Yeah. So you're not going to add on more space or add on. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to throw a zinger at you.
Okay.
I'm going to throw a zinger. Rubric. Let's go back to Rubik's
cube. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Rubik's cube. And I'm saying, you know, the world is in dire danger now from climate collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, climate collapse. And therefore, humans, if they're using their time trying to become better at Rubik's Cube rather than devoting themselves to saving the planet, we're going to deem that's immoral.
Most of the Rubik's Cubes are made of plastic too, so they're part of the problem.
It's even worse
inherently.
Than I thought.
Yeah,
it's even worse than I thought.
Yeah,
It's even worse than I thought. Yeah. So this movement towards greater mastery of Rubik's Cube, I say, is a threat to the climate.
Mm.
On two fronts.
Yeah.
First of all, it's made out of plastic, and then secondly, they're using time which could be devoted to saving the planet on mastering Rubik's Cube. And in a sense, they're kind of stealing from the other human beings on the planet.
Yeah. Yes.
What do you say to that? What do you say?
I can't get past around climate is my... I know there were ice ages, and at some point, the Earth warmed itself up out of an ice age. Well, long before the combustion engine or coal. And I'm just curious what makes us feel like this time is 100% human caused.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, and the other thing is that there were two things. One is that you have to be measuring something. You have to have a constant sense of measurement.
Mm-hmm.
As near as I can figure, we came out of the last ice age to the point where people said the last ice age was over at such a time. And near as I can figure, it's around 8,000 years ago. It's around 8,000 years ago. And what's been generally true that for the most part, let's say every century, kind of counting in 100 years, so it'd be 80 centuries, at the end of every century, there had been noticeable disappearance of ice on the planet. So every century for the last 80 centuries, the amount of ice on the planet covering land has been less than it was the century before. That would kind of tell me that what happened in the 79th and 80th century, internal combustion, is rather a very, very late event in the overall warming of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say?
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%.
Mm-hmm.
So, so much of, there's so much that we've got right now just in terms of,
Dean, you brought up Rubik's Cube. Look at the territory. Look at the territory we've covered dealing with Rubik's Cube.
I know. I mean, that's really something, isn't it?
Yeah. And it was all unpredictable. It was all unpredictable.
Yeah, this was infinitely.
There was absolutely no predictability to where we went with that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But delightful.
So what's Eben's take on you brought him up as a jumping off point for
well, just
your
that
insight.
Conversation. Yeah, I mean, that was this
I was talking
sharing.
About thinking yeah. about your thinking. I think yeah. what we like is that when I'm talking to you, I get to think about my thinking, and I think you feel the same.
Yes, absolutely. And that was this was when I was saying this to Eben. I've been talking about this idea of the completed the levels of the stuff that are removed from the terminal result. I don't know if terminal is the right word. And what I'm saying is that the reason that entrepreneurs are doing something is because what they're doing is going to help them do more of the thing that provides revenue for their business, right? The end result of it. That realtors are learning how to do websites, learning how to do Facebook, learning how to do all these things so that they get appointments with people who are ready to list their house or ready to buy a house, right? And all of those things go into that. They buy, they can buy leads. They can buy coaching on how to generate their own leads. They can do all of these things. But what I really think that the kind of next level opportunity is to deliver the actual result as a service, deliver appointments with someone who wants to list their house or someone who wants to buy a house. Because I'm really realizing that in Cloudlandia, there's so much efficiency in if you know how to do something and it is suitable for the doing of it from the cloud remotely on behalf of someone else, where you can do and only do that thing but dispatch them, then there's a what I was saying, it's almost like it's less expensive to get the result for somebody than it is to have them give you money to show them how to get the result.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, that's very clear. Yeah, very clear. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was saying is that coaching, I'm starting to realize the things that coaching, can work for, or the things where there's this other opportunity.
Well, first of all, here's the thing, going back to a concept that you introduced me to, if coaching requires me to do more house.
Yeah.
Is that a good thing?
No, that's what I'm saying is that's
coaching shows me how to get absolutely the right who for everything I want in life.
Right.
That's really worth a lot.
Yes. I think that's really the thing. Like when you're thinking about that, it's not skill based coaching or things that are on the way to getting the result. Now, there's an interesting thing that there are some situations, if you're going to be a massage therapist, for instance, you're going to need to know how to be a massage therapist, that you're equipping yourself with a capability that ultimately is going to be the terminal result for you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, since I'm married to one, she hasn't done it for 34 years.
Non-practicing, yeah.
She's a non-practicing massage therapist.
Uh-huh.
But without my relationship with her, I couldn't have built the company. And she said, you know, I'm starting to get tired out from all this massage that I learned. And Babs is a terrific massage therapist. I mean, she was... Mm-hmm. She had a top-notch clientele. She had, she had three types of people. She had like airline crews, pilots and flight crews, and yeah. She had dancers, ballet dancers, who wreak havoc on their bodies. Ballet dancing is not recommended. For a long life, you do structural damage, and she had stuntmen who did stunts in movies, and these are very stressful on the body. All three of these activities, and she was just known for kind of being a miracle worker, and so she practiced. I would say, she was probably doing it for about 4 years before I met her, and she mm-hmm. continued doing it for 4 more years. So 8 years. And mm-hmm. she said, you know, once you know it, you know it, and there's not really anything else to know. And she says, and then people get a benefit from what you're doing for a couple of days, but then they go back to the activity which made them issue,
which
and they come back,
it. Right?
Mm-hmm. And there's no progress.
Yes.
And she said, your hands get tired out. You develop various maladies in your hands. Mm-hmm. So she said, mm-hmm. Don't feel like doing this. And so we teamed up to create Strategic Coach, and now she. Yeah, she loves what she does. She puts teams together. You know, she got the whole team together that took us from in-person workshops to, you know, to virtual workshops. You know, huge jump in capability and mm-hmm. everything like that. So anyway, all depends. You know, I think coaching. Yeah, first of all, I totally agree. I've said to many that I think that coaching is to the 21st century what management was to the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was the central role of industrialization was management, structured management. But I think in Cloudlandia, the structure is people's aspiration, and the aspiration is infinite, so the amount of coaching that you can have going along with people's aspirations is also infinite.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So it's a really, that's been on my mind with the guiding my VCR thinking sessions here of thinking about the, you know, to think about all the capabilities that we have on tap. There's almost, you know, capabilities are really just another, I think it's a head start way of kind of thinking about who,
mm-hmm.
'cause if you can identify what capability you need, then your search comes for the who, but you have to be able to identify what capabilities would require. And that's where your vision, which fits so perfectly with ambition, you know, what's your ambition? And then what's your vision for that adds a layer of getting clear on the what's, the things that are needed
it's really interesting. If you take ambition, if it's lacking either creativity or cooperation, it's a limited ambition. If the creativity and the cooperation are growing, the ambition has no limits.
Yeah.
Creativity, if it's lacking either ambition or cooperation, it'll be a limited creativity, very limited creativity. But if both of those are growing, both the ambition and cooperation, the creativity can be unlimited. And the same thing for cooperation. If the ambition or creativity is lacking, it's restricted and limited cooperation. But if the other two are growing, So all three of them, and you could do the same with, I mean, vision capability. Anytime you take three capabilities, if you have two of them that are the contributors to the third, and all of them are growing, it just grows and grows and grows.
Yeah,
you can't do that. You can't do that on the mainland, but you can do it in Cloudlandia.
You know, it's the ultimate. It's the You think about that's what the vision is, taking and combining capabilities in unique ways to create a result. I mean, not since peanut butter and chocolate got together to create a new capability called the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup.
Oh,
that's a really good combination of two capabilities. You got all the peanut butter people and all the chocolate people thinking, how are we going to sell more chocolate? And the peanut butter people thinking, how are we going to sell more peanut butter?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder how much peanut butter Reese's Cup sells. I bet it's more than a lot of the peanut butter makers.
I wonder, you know, you think about, do you remember the advertising for the peanut butter cup when it first came out? The happy accident of, you know, somebody walking with chocolate and someone walking with their peanut butter, and they bump into each other and the chocolate bar goes into the peanut butter and they go, hey, you got your chocolate on my peanut butter. Hey, you got your peanut butter on my chocolate. And then they taste it and collectively they realize, wow, this goes really good together.
I didn't see that. That's great.
Serendipity.
I wonder if we get a hold of that. I think I'll get a hold of it. Because that explains creativity and innovation.
Yes. And a perfect collaboration.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet that there's and let me just give me 1 second, Dan, and I'm going to do a little quick search here. But I bet that on YouTube, I can find it. Reese's Peanut Butter Cup original.
Look at this Cloudlandia demonstration we're performing right in front of people's ears.
Original ad. Let's see. Original ad. Vintage 80s Reese's Peanut Butter Cup commercial, 1972. There it is. I'm going to send you the link.
This is perfect.
Yeah, 1972. That's the, these are great. That was their message before is, hey, you got your chocolate in my peanut butter. I mean, it's so good, right? That somebody saw that together, though. But what a great collaboration they've created.
Well, I love it.
Yes, I will send that to you. And that's, but that's good. Yeah, that's a great indication of looking, you know, because those were two siloed things, right? That were both head down trying to figure out how to do more of the other individual.
Yep.
Yeah. But hey, you bring the peanut butter, I'll bring the chocolate. Let's create something new. And then we'll have a reach rocket. Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see how the Snickers went together.
Well,
I bet there were,
I know how I that happened.
There were, I bet there were prior subsets of Snickers before.
There's a great series on the History Channel called The Food That Made America. And one of the things was, you know, Mr. Hershey in Pennsylvania figured out how to make chocolate. And then Mr. Mars in Michigan, I think, I don't know where they were, they add a malted, you know, he would make malted milkshake.
Yep. But because it's the gold standard, like it's the center of the confectionery world and Snickers, and everything else is positioned in concentric circles, like in the center circle is the Snickers bar. And then in concentric circles are other confectionaries. And it's just based on sales numbers, you know. And over time, the Snickers has been sitting there for, you know, more than a half a century. It's been sitting there in the center. And it's just got the right combination of just about everything. And, you know, when people think about coming up with a new candy bar, it's how far away from the center are they with their candy bar?
So there.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right.
What a success.
That's all we could do today, Dean.
It was a delightful conversation.
We've done our best. No one can fault us with not doing enough. We did everything we could.
Everything we could. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. All righty. I'm available 2 days after Christmas. Are you?
Me too. Of course. What else would
all
I
right.
do? Okay, Dan. Okay, thanks. Bye. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.